Hello, this is the Angry GM, and it is time for a proofread aloud. Today's proofread aloud is called Fixing Initiative Because I Want To, Part 2, Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System. In case the Part 2 in the title didn't give it away, this features the second part of my two-part attempt to make turn order and initiative in modern Dungeons & Dragons even just a tiny little marginal bit less shit. The first part was an ugly rant. My point was basically that this is something I care about and it's something I want to do, and so it's what I'm doing. I also said flat out that I know it's not going to make a huge-ass difference because of how modern Dungeons & Dragons is, but that it would make some difference, and that was enough for me. If you want to continue those debates and tell me I'm wasting my time making games better or I should be playing different games, comment on the previous part. I promise I'll give just as much of a shit about your opinions there as I would if you posted them here. Today, I'm going to share my variant turn order and initiative system for modern Dungeons & Dragons. Actually, I'm going to share you three. You're meant to stack them all up and use them all, but you don't have to. It's down to how much of a change you want. The first just makes it easier to track turn order at a physical table and facilitates re-rolling initiative every round. The second introduces the core rules of Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System. By itself, Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System will improve Dungeons & Dragons combat game feel. It'll give you better paced and more dynamical feeling fights at your table. But for real mechanical impact, you'll need Angry's full-on recovery time initiative system. That's the third variant. Like I said, I built this for me. I'm sharing it with you for free. You can use it if you want, or you can keep using the basic fire and forget cyclical horseshit turn order D&D is saddled with. It's up to you. Frankly, I don't give a crap what you do. Let's get started. Variant 1, turn order on the table. In my rant, I said that turn order is a pain in the ass to track. It's not a huge pain in the ass. It's not, oh shit, I thought that cactus was a chair. It's more like, I got a pricker burr in my undies. That's why every game master has to invent their own clever turn order tracking system and why Etsy is lousy with turn order tracking solutions. Because it's a pain in the ass to track, it's also a pain in the ass to adjust or re-roll. Hence the whole fire and forget cyclical horseshit turn order. If I want a more dynamical turn order and initiative system, though, I can't have any burrs in my ass. Those burrs add up. Here's the actual rules. Turn order on the table. When you roll initiative to determine your place in the turn order, take an extra d20 and set it to your initiative score. That die is your turn order tracker. Put it next to your miniature or token on the table, or alternatively, put it in front of you where everyone can see it. I recommend you use a spin down die. If you're using Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System, you'll want to use a D10 instead. If you're a game master and you're grouping similar monsters together with one initiative score, put a sticky note on the table for the group and put their turn order tracker on that. If the turn order changes every round, after you take your action, remove your turn order tracker. Roll initiative for the next round right away, but keep your turn order tracker off to the side until your game master asks you to put it out on the table at the top of the next round. It's that easy. Moving on. Variant 2. Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System. In my prior rant, I talked about speed factor initiative. That's when the action you're planning to take affects when you go in the turn order. As far as adding meaning to action choices in combat, speed factor initiative is a pretty good idea. But in terms of actual practical utility, it sucks bush cricket balls. Not only does it require this whole process of polling and recording action declarations, then rolling and modifying initiative scores, then resolving the declared actions in the proper order, but it also turns combat into a slow-ass strategic slog, more akin to big armies smashing together like glaciers, rather than a quick tactical skirmish where seconds count and choosing fast is as important as choosing right. But there is a possibility here if we ask ourselves why big, heavy weapons are actually slower than small, light weapons. The issue ain't entirely about the actual physical speed of the weapon. It ain't just down to how fast you can make the weapon move. That is part of the story, but it ain't the whole story. It ain't even the biggest part of the story. You don't even need to know anything about armed combat or physics to grok it either. You just need to have played any modern video game with melee combat and have noticed the different parts of a full attack animation. See, what really determines how quickly you can crank out attacks with a melee weapon is how easily you can recover and reset after each attack. After you swing or thrust a weapon or lunge with it or whatever, the weapon's out of position. You can't attack with it again until you bring it back into position. Sometimes it's as easy as just pulling the knife out of the wound so you can stibbity stab again. Sometimes it's pulling your whole body back out of a lunge. Sometimes it's about checking a heavy, unbalanced weapon's momentum or redirecting it to bring it back into the right place to swing it again. I don't want to do a long-ass explanation about moments of inertia and the difference between balanced and unbalanced weapons and the biomechanics of human combat here, because I think you see my point well enough to come on this journey with me. The only thing I'll add is that a lot of this shit is more about muscle strength and explosive power than it is about agility and reaction time. But that's just to stop anyone from pissing and moaning about my taking dexterity out of the initiative equation. Seriously, fuck dexterity. My point is just that speed factor initiative is about front-loading everything involved in attack and recovery time. It's putting it all before the initiative roll. It's just as valid to shove it all in the back door and put all the attack and recovery time stuff after the initiative roll. The action you just took determines when you can act again because you need to recover from your action, whether that's to make another attack with the same weapon or to do something else. You can't back out of a fight until you stop your axe from swinging and shift your feet from firm axe-swinging stance to actual running. Even if your action isn't a weapon attack, it's still got a recovery time. After you open a door, you ain't in a position to get all stabby right away. Your stance isn't right, you might not be facing the right direction, and your knife might not even be in your hand, what with the need to operate a door handle or whatever. Even if it is, you probably had to change the grip to door. If you used your offhand, you need to get that out of the way of the fight. As for spellcasting, I think it's perfectly reasonable to assume that using your immortal spirit like a lightning rod to ground out the eldritch forces that can unmake the cosmos, and then redirecting and reshaping those forces to make manifest your will in the tissue of lies we call reality, might leave you needing to catch your breath and clear your head. I also think this makes a good case for removing stat modifiers from initiative rolls altogether. Sure, you could argue that you could use different modifiers for different recoveries, but that adds a layer of totally unnecessarily complexity. The words are all right, but nothing my mouth did was okay there. Yeah, so we're just going to take that again after a sip of delicious coffee, which is incredibly hot because this thermos keeps my coffee way too hot. Holy crap. Okay, I also think this makes a good case for removing stat modifiers from initiative rolls altogether. Sure, you could argue that you could use different modifiers for different recoveries, but that adds a layer of totally unnecessary complexity, and it just means everyone will be using their best stat for initiative almost all the time, which means a pretty level playing field, so you might as well take it out. Besides, it's best when turn order is highly randomized and mixed up and changes drastically from round to round. assuming you want well-paced, exciting, dynamic combats. Really, anywhere we can remove some math and just use straight-up naked die rolls is best. Given the turn order on the table variant above, ideally everyone can just throw a die for initiative and leave it right the hell there. No math, no fiddling, just hold it there until it's time to put it out for the next round. But that doesn't let us vary initiative based on recovery time. Or does it? The obvious solution is a dice ladder. Arrange the dice in size order. First is the D4, then the D6, then the D8, and then the D10. We can stop there. We don't need more than 10 phases in combat. We'll make the phases ordinal. Phase 1 is the first, phase 2 is the second, and so on. So all you have to do is throw the right size die, and that tells you when you'll go. If you roll a 3, you go in the third phase. You see how all this comes together? And how it meshes with turn order on the table so you can use it on a physical at a physical table. In a virtual tabletop, you can just update initiative scores manually. It's pretty easy to do most of them. Or maybe you can write a mod. Honestly, though, this is where virtual tabletops actually show how restrictive they are and how they run so counter to the DIY spirit of the hobby. Perhaps I'll write a rant about that. Perhaps I already did. So, you take an action. When you're done, you roll a die based on how hard it is to recover from that action. Let's call that a recovery die. The straight-up no-math result tells you when you go in the turn order in the next round. Meanwhile, things like improved initiative feasts and hastes and slow spells and other shit that modifies initiative rolls, except for dexterity because fuck dexterity, can be bottled just by moving one die size up or down the ladder. So what do the actual rules look like? Angry's Recovery Time Initiative System. Combat rounds are divided into 10 phases, numbered from 1 to 10. Every creature has an initiative score that determines the phase in which it acts. If multiple creatures act in the same phase, the Game Master decides the order in which to resolve those turns. Every creature has an initiative die based on its size. Small and smaller creatures have a D4 initiative die. Medium creatures have a D6 initiative die. Large creatures have a D8 initiative die. Even larger creatures than that use a D10 initiative die. At the start of the first round of combat, each creature rolls its initiative die, and that die is set next to the creature's token or miniature or on a card representing that creature's group. That tracks its place in the turn order. After a creature takes its turn, it immediately rolls a recovery die to determine its place in the turn order next round. The result is held off to the side until the current round is over and then placed on the table at the start of the next round. Recovery dice can be a D4, D6, D8, or D10. A D4 recovery die is the smallest and best recovery die possible, while a D10 recovery die is the biggest and the worst. If a creature takes an attack action, the recovery die is equal to the base damage die of the attack, regardless of the number of dice rolled or any static modifiers. If an attack does 2d8 plus 6 bludgeoning damage, the recovery die is d8. An attack that deals 3d12 damage uses a d10 recovery die. If a creature takes a cast a spell action, the recovery die is a d8 unless the creature uses a cantrip or casts a spell at higher levels using a higher level spell slot as described in the spell. If the spell is a cantrip, the recovery die is a d6. If the spellcaster is using a higher level spell slot than the spell normally requires, the recovery die is a D10. If the creature takes a dash, disengage, dodge, help, hide, search, or use an object action, their size-based initiative die is used for the recovery die. If a creature takes the ready action, their recovery die is based on the action they take when they actually resolve the readied action. If a creature ends the round without having taken the action they readied with the ready action, they automatically go in the first phase of the next round. Set their turn order tracker to 1. A creature can deliberately use the ready action to act in the first phase of the next round in this way. If a creature takes a bonus action during their turn, increase the recovery die determined by their main action by one size. Thus, a rogue who moves, then uses a cunning action to dash, then attacks with a short sword for 1d6 plus 3 piercing damage, will use a d8 recovery die. The recovery die for a short sword attack is normally a d6, but using a bonus action bumps it up to a d8. Likewise, if a creature interacts for free with an object as part of another action on their turn, the recovery die determined by their action is increased by one size. Thus, a fighter who draws a longsword and then attacks, or one who opens a door as part of a move before attacking with a longsword, rolls a d10 recovery die. If a creature takes any other action, the Game Master should assign a recovery die on an ad hoc basis using their own best judgment. For quick, easy to recover from actions, use a d4. For slow, staggering actions, use a d10. And that's it. That's the core of Angry's recovery time initiative system. Variant 3. Angry's full-on recovery time initiative system, now with maximized mechanical meaningfulness. Angry's recovery time initiative system makes the whole turn order and initiative thing way more exciting and dynamical. It also adds some actual weight to action choices. It'll encourage the players, and the monsters, to consider the turn order when picking their actions and their targets. An archer might favor a target they can kill before that target's turn over one that's already gone this round. A spellcaster might notice they get to go right before a powerful creature and hit it with a debuff. That shit won't always be a big deal, but it will get the players considering who goes when as part of their action calculus so they can spot opportunities to have a bigger impact. But there are definitely some modifications I can make to the core system and to the base Dungeons & Dragons rules to increase the impact futility of Angry's Recovery Time Initiative system. Moreover, by laying out both the rules and the system for tracking them all in one go, I was able to see some mechanical possibilities I never would have considered. For example, if I were tracking the turn order with a list, I wouldn't think of rules to change it on the fly. But with the turn order tracked with physical counters on the table, updating the turn order at runtime, as the computer kids say, is much more feasible and practical. This variant ain't really a separate thing. Instead, it's really just the rest of Angry Recovery Time Initiative System. But some of you are pussies, and you're afraid to make big changes for big gains, so I separated them out for those of you who just want Angry's slightly tweaked turn order for sissy babies. Unfortunately, because this really isn't a unified variant, but rather just a selection of more rules to add, the only thing I can do is just rattle them off lightning round style with some topical headings. Here they are. Durations and timing. 1 minute is 3 rounds of combat. I leave it up to you to decide whether that means combat takes longer or whether it's just a terminology change so that whenever you see concentration up to 1 minute, you just replace that with up to 3 rounds. I don't really care. The idea of fixed length rounds is stupid anyway. Even the player's handbook hedges by saying rounds are about 6 seconds. Anyway, every duration that's 1 minute is now 3 rounds. That's more than enough most of the time, especially because if you're not an idiot, a 3-round effect will proc 4 times. Idiots shouldn't be playing spellcasters anyway. I did the math. Don't bitch and whine at me over this. Durations are ticked down at the end of every combat round, including in the round in which the effect starts. Set a counter equal to the number of rounds when an effect starts and turn it down by 1 at the end of every round. If the counter is on 1 at the end of a round, the effect ends right then and there. Then, start the new round and have people put out their turn order trackers. I just realized that there is a slight ambiguity in end of the round versus end of the turn, so I wanted to make that very, very clear. Now you have to care about timing your buffs, debuffs, and non-instantaneous spells and abilities. Recovery, reactions, and sneak attacks. This is going to seem a little abstract to some of you, and I don't care. It's a good mechanic. It's also justifiable in world, but explaining the justification won't matter to anyone who complains about it, so I ain't going to bother. From the start of a round until the start of the phase in which you are eligible to act, you are considered recovering. If your turn order tracker says 4, you're in recovery for the first 3 phases of the current round. While recovering, you can't take reactions. That includes opportunity attacks. Heavy weapon users might want to invest in improved initiative if they want to hold the line. I was going to do a whole separate thing because this system totally reversed the value of improved initiative. Whereas before, improved initiative was something that you know, the fastest characters would take to be even faster. Now it's something the fastest characters don't need because they're as fast as they're going to be no matter what. Instead, it's more valuable for the medium and the slower characters to buy off the negatives of being medium and slow. I didn't include that whole thing. I'm hoping that when people think about this, they'll see that what I really did was I changed the preference math for improved initiative. It's still valuable. It's just valuable for the opposite people than it used to be. Anyway, heavy weapon users might want to invest in improved initiative if they want to hold the line. Keep reading before you tell me how horrible this is and how much I suck. Rogues and other creatures with the sneak attack ability do not need advantage on the attack roll to sneak attack against a recovering target, nor do they need nearby allies. Recovering makes you vulnerable. Knockback and delay. The base damage die of an attack is the damage die rolled to determine its damage, regardless of the number of dice rolled, any fixed modifiers, or any additional damage dice from special abilities like a rogue's sneak attack. If a rogue deals 1d4 plus 3 plus 2d6 piercing damage with a dagger on a sneak attack, the base damage die is a d4. Likewise, if a bugbear deals 2d8 plus 2 plus 2d6 damage with a Morningstar using its surprise attack trait, the base damage die is d8. Got it? If you are hit by a spell or attack whose base damage die is larger than your size-based initiative die, not equal to or larger, actually larger, you suffer knockback. You must bump your turn order tracker up by 1. If you were set to go in phase 6, you now go in phase 7. If you were set to go in phase 10, you're instead delayed. Knock down your turn order tracker and roll your base initiative die to determine when you go next round. You lost your turn. If your turn order tracker isn't active because you've already gone this round, knockback has no effect. It doesn't spill over. Heavy weapon users might lose some opportunity attacks, but they can stunlock even large, powerful opponents now. Checked attacks. Finally, when you make a melee attack, not a spell or a ranged attack, you can choose to check the attack. You can choose to reduce the base damage die by 1 or more sides down to a minimum of a d4 in order to roll a better recovery die. Replace the base damage die of the attack with your chosen damage die. Damage modifiers and bonus damage dice from abilities like sneak attack are unaffected. You must choose to check the attack and specify your chosen damage die before rolling the attack roll. If you are entitled to multiple attacks on your turn, the highest base damage die determines your recovery die, so if you want to improve your place in the turn order, you have to check all your attacks. For example, suppose Ardrick is using a halberd, but his player, Adam, doesn't want to let his foe escape his attacks of opportunity next round. So he decides to check the attack. Instead of his normal 1d10 plus 5 slashing damage, Adam chooses to deal 1d6 plus 5 slashing damage with a checked attack, and roll a d6 recovery die to determine his place in the turn order next round. Yes, you read that right. As a one-off bonus to this whole big thing about initiative that none of you wanted, I also just wrote a slapdash light attack and heavy attack system into D&D in less than 150 words. You're welcome. And maybe next time, you fuckers will just let me run with my ideas instead of telling me what a waste of time they all are.